Makeshift Stories is a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, powered by ATB Financial. If you want to know more about the network and how it supports Alberta podcasts, or check out some other great shows by our members, please point your browser to albertapodcastnetwork.com. And to learn more about our sponsor, ATB Financial, head over to atb.com.
Is there a place in time where logic breaks down and wonderment begins? Could that be somewhere or sometime along an indefinable line between the reasonable and the highly unlikely? Makeshift Stories presents a monthly journey into the improbable.
A doppelganger is a lookalike which is often described as a paranormal phenomena or a harbinger of bad luck. Or is a doppelganger the manifestation of an alter ego which leads a double life? Is the existence of a second identical self even possible? And if so, would the two differ in behavior? A good and evil you, for example. Would one be more real than the other? In this month's story, after noticing a ghostly figure in a series of photos, Trisha, a top-performing career architect attending her company retreat, starts getting a series of unusual messages on her cell phone. At first, she suspects a colleague, but soon realizes that can't be possible. Eventually, she discovers that the perpetrator is herself, and her identical other has an important message about the future of the world. We invite you now to sit back and relax as you listen to Makeshift Stories 136, Doppelganger. Somewhere in some time, your other self might be the bearer of unwelcome news.
Standing on a rocky prominence which jutted out into the Pacific Ocean, Trisha stopped for a moment to take in the incredible view. Wind-sculpted and drought-stressed pines suddenly gave way to the gray-blue waves, methodically eating away at the constantly changing coast 100 meters below, where the famous beaches had once nestled against the shore. The runted, dying trees with their distinct inland lean, bearing witness to the aggressive weather, only added to the visual effect. Currently, it was calm, but low clouds pinned to the barren peaks of the Gulf Islands 60 kilometers away hinted at a turbulent future. The late afternoon sun streamed through the gaps in the clouds, casting sparkling gold streaks across the channel. She dug in her bag for her cell phone, then took a sequence of images turning to create a 360-degree panorama. Trisha stood for a moment longer, lingering until the sun finally disappeared behind the clouds. The temperature immediately dropped, cutting through her sweaty clothes to make her shiver. Reluctantly, Trisha turned and started the long hike back to her rent-a-car. Arriving back at the hotel just before dinner, an unexpected notification popped up on Trisha's cell phone. "Your panoramic photo is ready," it proudly announced. She didn't remember turning that particular feature on, or that it even existed. She assumed her phone had found an open Wi-Fi network and uploaded all the photos from her hike. Then some eager AI had recognized the sequence of images from the coast and automatically stitched them together. An unasked-for enhancement that was actually useful, she mused, but knew she had paid for it through the harvesting of her location data and future ads for coastal vacations. Nothing was free. At first, the panoramic photo looked seamless. Trisha was impressed. She panned across the image, remembering the exhilaration of the moment, moving from the distant islands to the shore, then to the ragged trees where she abruptly stopped and stared. A ghostly figure stood where no one had been. It was blurry and indistinct, but there was something familiar, something about the way the figure was dressed and posed. Still, there had been no one else on the point. It was late in the season, and despite the popularity of the trail, she hadn't encountered another person on the way in or out. And yet, there it was, a murky figure in the shadow of one of the dying pines. Its arms looked as if it had been reaching out to touch her. A sudden shiver ran up her spine. She recalled vaguely an old saying about someone walking on your grave causing a person to shiver, and instantly had goosebumps. But she wasn't cold. Why had she even thought of that? The blurred figure was just some artifact from the process, she assured herself, Maybe the selfie she had taken in the parking lot before the hike had somehow been mistaken as part of the scene. To prove her theory, Trisha located the individual images on her phone, skimming through them until she found the spot. But nothing was in either photo where the anomaly had appeared. Then she looked at her selfie and compared it to the half-cut-off phantom in the panorama. It was the wrong angle and wrong pose, but the apparition did sort of look like her. Still, it had to be an artifact of the process, a GPS error or something, she rationalized, which caused the machine stitching the thing together to make a mistake. Even AIs occasionally make mistakes, she reminded herself. Nothing was foolproof. Her cell suddenly vibrated in her hand, reminding her that she had to meet her colleagues in the lounge at 7. Trisha dropped the phone on the hotel room bed and went to get ready. The first thing she noticed as she walked into the lounge were the large flat-screen TVs which boxed in a support pillar. The arrangement reminded her of a reporter's microphone flag. All four were tuned to a 24-hour news channel, and although the sound was turned down, an electronic ticket tape streamed a constant flood of headings. Nuclear tests continued in defiance of sanctions. UN to vote against. Drought in South Africa forced residents to flee. Trisha generally chose to ignore the news, especially in the last few years. Paying attention to it made her feel like the world was, disaster by disaster, falling apart.
Trisha, over here!
The loud male voice came from the corner of the lounge, interrupting her thoughts. It was Michael, her counterpart from the central office. Despite working with him every day online, yesterday, at the early morning power breakfast before the start of the corporate retreat, was the first time she had met him face to face. In the flesh, he was much larger than she had imagined and less well-kept, and his aggressive cologne overwhelmed her when he got too close. He was a slightly off clone of the online Michael she knew, a kind of weird caricature which she liked even less than the self-inflated virtual one. Now she was stuck with him and the other career architects from the company for the next 4 days.
We weren't sure if you had been blown off that cliff. There was a wind warning this aft. And you, well, you're so small a light breeze could lift you off the ground. At least compared to me.
He laughed at his own bad joke, patting the beginning of a middle-aged bulge.
How was the hike?
Trisha managed to evade his Old Spice-saturated aura by sliding into the opposite side of the booth near the AC vent. Safely upwind, she ignored his swipe at her diminutive size.
It was surprisingly cool on the coast. Not hot like here. Hard to believe the difference, but the coast is breathtaking. Worth the trip and the hike. How was the day's session?
Boring, unless you're into bad PowerPoint presentations. Should have gone with you.
He smiled insinuatingly. Trisha involuntarily shuddered at the thought, but knew he didn't have a choice. Michael's contract closing rate was so low that his supervisors had insisted he go. In fact, the morning session was the main reason he had been sent to the retreat. She had endured working with him because he was 1,000 miles away. The rumor was that he had finally reached the bottom of the stack rank, which meant that he'd soon be replaced, and Trisha would never have to deal with him again.
They had some good tips on signing and managing those rising stars. You know the ones, the kind of people who are going to go someplace, but you personally can't stand? I need to get my numbers up,
he admitted. Trisha couldn't figure out who could stand Michael's frat house attitude. Maybe it appealed to some types of clients, but she couldn't think of any. Wanting to change the subject and burn up the time until someone else showed up, she pulled out her phone, opened the photo gallery to the panorama, and placed it down on the table.
I swear I was alone when I took this, but when it was seen together, see, there's kind of a weird ghost?
Michael pawed the phone with a meaty hand, lifted his Oakleys to his forehead, and squinted.
Nice shot. Looks like you got yourself in the last frame, that's all.
But how would I do that? I wasn't taking selfies.
Maybe you flipped to the front camera in one frame.
No, I checked,
Trisha insisted.
Really? Well, then it's probably some kind of aura, or maybe a human-shaped orb or something.
Trisha hated it when he made fun of her.
I don't...
She began to object.
Hey, don't worry. I know you're into that kind of new-agey stuff.
How do you know what I'm into?
Michael was crossing a line she didn't like.
I can tell. It's obvious. You're a yoga vegan type. Goes with the territory, and...
He gave her a self-satisfied grin.
I follow your social media.
That's creepy,
Trisha pointed out, moving further away along the bench.
No, it's just research. You're a top performer. I've been told to watch you and figure out how you do it and do the same. But I'm not going to give up red meat to get there. Oops,
he laughed.
I didn't mean to delete that.
And handed the phone back. Trisha lined up several less than polite words and was about to deliver one when the rest of their party arrived, diffusing the moment.
Were you watching the news?
Alyssa, one of the younger career architects from the new Mumbai office, asked as she slid in beside Trisha.
No.
Trisha's phone vibrated. She grabbed it back off the table and checked the notifications. The panorama Michael deleted had been reassembled. This time, the ghost had shifted to a new location on the opposite side of the sequence. She was about to say something when a text appeared. See things for what they are. Trisha scowled at Michael. His hands were under the table, and he was looking down. She was sure it was him, and admonished herself for showing Michael the panorama. Obviously, he wasn't going to let it go. She went to respond, but the number wasn't his. It looked like the message had come from the carrier. He must have spoofed the number, she decided. He was obviously more tech-savvy than she had given him credit for. At least he had another skill set to fall back on when he lost his job.
Trisha, you should really see this,
Alyssa urged, a hint of panic in her voice. When she looked up, everyone at her table was watching the screens mounted around the central post, holding up the roof of the lounge, where a video showed a fire racing up a desiccated hillside. Helicopters buzzed overhead like angry wasps, dropping buckets of bright orange fire retardant. In the background, an all-too-familiar cityscape shimmered through the heat.
It's not far from the head office campus.
Alyssa was kneading her hands together anxiously. She didn't know her well, but the woman was usually the icon of relaxed. Trisha strained to hear the newscaster over the buzz of the room.
The multi-year drought on the coast has turned the hillsides, parks, and open spaces into a flammable disaster waiting to happen. Last night, a fire started in the hills on the outskirts of the city, near a major business park and residential development. Both have been evacuated. 200 firefighters and helicopters have worked throughout the night to contain the fire, but warm winds today have pushed it past their lines, threatening.
Glad we're not there. I hear some people got trapped on campus when they closed the freeway.
Alyssa noted and reached for the bottle of water that Michael, trying to impress everyone, had ordered for the table, and poured herself a glass. The bottle, whose source claimed to be a glacier in the French Alps, was more expensive than half the wine list. Anyone with any sense knew the glaciers in the Alps were long gone. Trisha wondered where the bottled water had really come from.
I'm sure they'll get everyone evacuated,
she said without thinking as she scrutinized the bottle's label. Trisha had to admit Alyssa was right. She was glad she was at the retreat and far away from the fires. Her phone vibrated again, interrupting her thoughts. It was another text with a nonsensical message.
You need to put the clues together to see what's going on.
Trisha sighed. It was going to be a long 4 days unless Michael lost interest in his little game. The news cycled on to the next story, something about refugees and protests. She wasn't sure. The sound had been turned down.
We need a picture of our top team,
Alyssa suddenly suggested enthusiastically.
Jerry, Andrea, Francisco, slide in beside me and Trisha.
Apparently, I'm not part of this, so I might as well be useful,
Michael grumbled, then grabbed Trisha's phone off the table.
She'll email it to everyone, won't you, Miss Top Performer?
He gave Trisha a sarcastic grin.
Squeeze in. More. Smile. That's it.
The phone flashed, leaving spots in Trisha's eyes.
One more.
It flashed again.
Perfect. See?
He handed the phone to Alyssa, who nodded, then put it down. After a rather brief, dry discussion of the lessons learned from the day's sessions, which was their assigned homework, it became obvious they didn't really have much in common, so discussion died off. Trisha soon found herself abandoned at the table. To her relief, Michael had been one of the first to leave. Before going back to her room, Trisha pulled out her phone and opened the company messaging app. She attached the second team photo and hit send, then opened the image gallery to delete the two pictures. She looked at the first one Michael had taken. Everyone was red-eyed from the flash. She was about to trash it when she noticed a ghost behind her, which reminded her of the apparition from the panorama earlier in the day. She flicked to the second image. Her doppelganger wasn't there.
Weird. How'd he do that?
She wondered, loud enough for someone at the next table to look over. Embarrassed, she quickly deleted both photos and left, deciding that Michael must have done something to trick the phone into making a double exposure, something she thought impossible with a digital camera. Truly, Michael had a different calling than a career architect. Back in the room, the hotel Wi-Fi was too slow to stream anything. Too many people on it, of course. And as always, there was nothing interesting on cable. So Trisha decided to go to bed. But her phone buzzed again, another text. She swore. Michael was really going over the top on this gag of his. She read the message anyway. "Watch the news. I've put something there for you," it advised. Trisha found Michael's cell number and texted, "Stop it." Then angrily tossed the phone onto the nightstand. Exhausted and fed up, she dropped onto the bed, meaning to go to sleep early, but sleep wouldn't come. Frustrated, she eventually turned on the TV and watched the channel listings mindlessly roll by, until a news headline caught her attention. Doomsday clock moved closer to apocalyptic 0 hour by scientists. Trisha immediately hit select on the remote. She hadn't heard anything about the doomsday clock before, but there was nothing like an end-of-the-world prediction to get attention. The tactic had worked. She was interested. On the screen, a woman, presumably a scientist, wearing glasses and a somber gray business suit, stood behind a tacky lectern with a makeshift sign which read, "Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists." The lighting, the stage set, everything, were many steps down from the slick corporate presentations Trisha was used to. And although almost comic, it added a weird solemnity to the press event. It was like the local community center versus big network news, which underlined the hopelessness of the speaker's cause. Trisha listened to the woman, who was obviously uncomfortable with public speaking, stumble through a prepared statement.
Given recent events, we've taken the unprecedented step of moving the clock from 5 minutes to 1 minute before midnight. Since the clock was started in 1947, and even in the darkest days of the Cold War, a 4 minute jump is unheard of. But this reflects a worsening global security landscape caused by foolhardy rhetoric and careless nuclear bravado, combined with an intensifying dismissal of scientific expertise at a time when it is critically needed to secure our collective future.
The view cut to another camera, revealing a man and woman standing beside a black cloth-covered easel. They turned on cue and slowly removed the cloth to reveal an amateur-looking mock-up of a clock face. Another woman got up from a front-row seat and turned the minute hand until it almost touched 12. Trisha jolted up, hitting the headboard so hard she saw stars. The woman who had turned the minute hand looked like her. Older, a bit shabbier, but the woman could have been her twin. The clip ended, and the screen cut back to the newsroom. Trisha's phone buzzed. She grabbed it and read the text. It was Michael. "What are you talking about? I didn't even have your cell phone number until you texted me a minute ago," he complained. Trisha ignored him, swiped his message off her screen, jabbed open a browser, and searched for a clip of the scientist's press conference. She found it and watched. The version posted online did not switch cameras. Instead, it kept on the speaker through the entire announcement. Then, cut to a close-up of the crude clock as a familiar hand moved the minute arm. It was her hand. She was sure of it. However, she had never worn jewelry or nail polish. There was nothing specific that screamed Trisha. She just knew it was hers, but then stopped herself and looked at it more critically. If her colleagues saw the video, they would probably say that it could be anyone's hand, and they would be right. But what about the first news clip? Why had that been changed? It was obvious Michael couldn't have arranged this. Something else was going on. Trisha wondered if she had been asleep and had just dreamed the whole thing. She stayed up for a complete news cycle to wait for the story to repeat, but it evidently didn't merit enough importance to make it to the next TV newscast. Confused and frustrated, exhaustion finally overtook her and she fell into a shallow, restless sleep. The alarm seemed to come from another universe. At first, her mind incorporated the sound into her dream. She was on a beach, one of the new artificial beaches which had to be constantly moved inland to protect it from the hungry rising ocean. Somehow she was outside of her body, watching herself dash from one knot of people to another, trying to get them to move, to run away from the menacing water, which appeared to be boiling. A civil defense siren wailed. Everyone was ignoring it. She could feel her desperation, but at the same time felt strangely detached. She didn't understand why no one saw the creeping danger. The rising pitch of the siren became a sustained high note of a saxophone in the tune she used for her morning alarm. Then the dream shattered in a burst of awareness, and she woke, tired and disoriented.
Our private network is the gateway to your success.
The words in large black sans serif letters flooded across the white screen behind the speaker as Trisha discreetly slipped into the back of the conference room, found an empty chair, and quietly sat down.
This is our new value proposition.
The presenter paused for effect.
You'll need to unpack it for your prospects. Basically, if they are a new grad in a high-demand field and want to get the most for their skills and a guarantee of future wealth, then they need to sign with us. That's the value we bring to them.
Trisha hoped no one had noticed her slip in. Missing the start of the director's presentation would be frowned upon. The woman on stage continued.
We have created new packets with testimonials from existing clients, all well-known one percenters.
Trisha felt her phone begin to vibrate. She stiffened and tried to ignore it until the person sitting beside her leaned over and whispered,
Your phone. Turn it off or go out into the hall and answer it.
Embarrassed, Trisha struggled to shut it off. Failing, she rushed for the door. Bursting into the wide hall outside, she momentarily disturbed the board supplier rep staffing their company tables. They looked up to see if the refugee from the session was worth pitching to, then quickly went back to talking amongst themselves, except for one who was distracted by the ubiquitous flat screens, which formed an electronic crown molding around the hall. All the screens were showing a news feed in mid-story. They cycled through downward charts, parched land, angry politicians, precise cartoon-like military parades, storm-beaten shores, and missiles slowly rising from hidden bases. Oddly, the intricate apocalyptic montage reminded Trisha of Pablo Picasso's Guernica, his mural of the bombing of a Basque village. Her phone vibrated and buzzed impatiently, bringing her attention back to the reason why she had fled the conference room. She held the annoying thing up to her face to unlock it. This time, the vid call icon was pulsing. Apprehensively, she swiped it open. The resulting picture was extremely low res, like the caller was using some cheap or antiquated webcam. A window directly behind the person further degraded the image, turning it into a silhouette. Trisha tried to shade her phone and squinted. She could make out the distinctive hair, braided and layered back to one side.
I only have a few seconds,
the shadowy figure hurriedly explained.
Sorry about the connection. Any more bandwidth would be detected, but you need to know you have a chance. There's time to change things. Don't believe what you are seeing around you. It doesn't have to go this way.
The voice was intense and rushed, like there was too much to say in too short a time, and didn't know where to start or how best to organize her thoughts.
You're probably thinking this is a crank call, and you're struggling to admit that you recognize yourself in me. Remember the moment you decided to follow the path you're on. You know the day. You can still take that turn. Leave the conference and start.
The call suddenly dropped, leaving Trisha staring at a reflection on the empty screen of that distinctive haircut. An involuntary shiver moved down her spine, making her feel cold and isolated. This was getting too weird. Why would someone try to imitate and stalk her? All her clients were happily placed, gladly paying a small percentage of their salaries for her services. Everyone in the company liked her, even Michael in his own pain-in-the-butt way. She knew the exact day the caller had mentioned. It was the day she had been offered her job, the point where she had to choose between a coveted position in the best firm in the field and, well, one person couldn't make a difference, she had rationalized, and still believed. So she had made the practical choice, the right choice. Why would she want to reconsider?
Fact-checking?
The unexpected voice came from behind her, almost making her drop her phone. It was the company rep who had been watching the flat screens.
You can't believe everything you see these days.
Trisha read the woman's name tag. Gabriella, Workplace Data Solutions.
Facts are my job, which makes me all the more vigilant when it comes to this stuff.
She nodded to the flat screens.
You can't take anything at face value, especially the news. It's all constructed and paid for. Makes you think, doesn't it? What's real? Everything can be faked. Personally, I need to see it for myself. You need to be able to verify the sources, touch it with your hands, see it with your own eyes.
Anticipating a sales pitch, Trisha quickly excused herself and headed back to the conference room. As she slipped back into the session, the presentation was wrapping up. The director of marketing was taking questions from the audience. On the projection screen behind her were the words, "Take control of your tomorrow by starting to build your future today with Optimum Career Management." Then below them, two additional lines briefly appeared.
"Check your phone, Trisha. It's urgent. We need to connect."
Trisha looked anxiously around the room, but no one else seemed to have noticed the fleeting text. Reluctantly, she checked her phone and found a new message with an attached image of her from yesterday at the coast, standing, arms held out, holding her phone, aiming it toward the unseen person who took the photo. The message said, "Same place, anytime you can make it." Trisha's blood ran cold, and her first impulse was to call the police. But something in her told her that she would be okay, that she needed to follow through. By the time she had reached the end of the point, a late morning sun was tentatively warming the sharp fall air. As a precaution, Trisha had let her group know she was going back to the point to meet an old friend. The rational part of her mind said it was a stupid thing to do, but her gut said there was nothing to be concerned with, and her intuition had won out. It didn't take long to find the approximate place she had stood the day before to take the panorama. The climate-tortured trees marked the spot, but no one was there to meet her. Confused, Trisha searched around until the air near the trees began to pucker as if someone behind an invisible cloak was pushing from the other side, causing fist-sized distortions. The invisible hands worked the air until what could be described as a seam appeared, which rapidly spread out from the original disturbance. The seam suddenly ripped open, and a person pushed through. Trisha found herself looking at herself, an older Trisha, worry lines starting to radiate out from her eyes, gray roots in her dark hair. Trisha stood frozen to the spot, staring until the other began to speak.
"I know this is going to be hard to believe."
The doppelganger looked apologetic, as if she were about to do something she would regret.
"I am Trisha Russo,"
she claimed.
"I know that sounds crazy. I know from your perspective, you are Trisha Russo. And in a sense, you are. Look, I don't have much time for this intervention. I can't afford to be caught. I'd lose my job. More importantly, I'd lose you, my doppelganger, my virtual self. They'd claim the experiment had been contaminated and shut it down."
Trisha regained her composure and stepped closer to the older version of herself.
"I must be hallucinating. Maybe I slipped off the cliff yesterday and I'm lying down there on the rocks dying. Is that it? Is that what's going on?" "No, it's not. This is real. I can assure you of that. It's just not real in the way you think." "Then I don't understand. If you are self-aware, if you feel, dream, if you love, if you experience joy, pain, anxiety, and hope, then does it really matter beyond that? Is it of any consequence what the fundamental nature of your existence is? Atoms or bytes of data? Does it matter at all? Stop. You're not making any sense. Where did you come from, and why are you here? I'll tell you, but there's something you need to understand first. Despite my colleagues' insistence, you are all self-aware. You are as real to yourself as any of them. I've been trying to explain that, however, it's fallen on deaf ears. They don't want to think about the ramifications. The ethical problems are huge. Huge! Imagine creating a vast and intricate sociological experiment, one that would allow you to discover how to change the world, how to solve our current problems, and prevent the premature end of us as a species. How would you do it, and do it fast enough to compare different factors and apply the results? There was only one choice. Create a model so detailed and complex that it could take all factors into consideration. But wouldn't that end up being a complete mirror of reality? I mean, everything, down to an insignificant blade of grass, would need to be replicated. I don't know,
Tricia said, not liking what older her seemed to be implying.
If this is a joke, just get to the punchline. It's not a joke, Tricia. This is the truth. You are not real. But then, you are also self-aware. That's how detailed the model had to be to create accurate projections.
Tricia tried to interrupt, but her doppelganger waved her down impatiently.
Listen, you need to listen carefully. The simulation you are a part of is projected to end soon, in a year or a decade from your perspective. A war or some other disaster or something else will trigger it. It's obvious from the data. That will be in a day or a week in my time. As I've hinted, we run the project in an accelerated time frame. The specific set of circumstances we have set up are playing out in here. But there is hope. Have you heard of the butterfly effect? One small change can determine the outcome of an entire system. Because I discovered you are sentient, ethically, I can't stand by and let your world unfold as a sacrificial lamb for ours. So, I've interfered, polluted the data. I've told you what you are, an experiment. But you can make a small change that can avert the end. The simulation is programmed to run until it comes to a natural conclusion, which could be centuries or millennia away in your time frame.
Older Tricia anxiously checked a device strapped to her wrist.
I have to go. You can keep your simulation going. You can be the butterfly that saves your world.
The doppelganger suddenly slipped back through the seam in reality, and Tricia found herself standing alone on the point, listening to the rising seas eat away at the shore below, unsure of what she believed or what she should do.
Make Sure Stories and the Alberta Podcast Network are powered by ATB Financial. ATB has a new digital bank account. And the best part? There's basically no fees as long as you're doing most of your banking digitally. You also earn interest on higher balances. If you want to learn more about the great things ATB is doing, head over to atb.com. We hope that you've enjoyed this month's story. As always, if you like what we're doing, please tell your friends about us or write a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher Radio or join us on Facebook. We love hearing your comments, so send us an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. And thanks to those from all over the planet who have already emailed us. We release a new story every month between the 15th and the 20th. To listen to Make Shift Stories on your iOS or Android device, please download Stitcher Radio from iTunes or the Google Play Store. This month's episode was written by Alan V. Hare and read by Mitchell Tu. The opening and closing themes were composed and recorded by David Hume. And don't forget to listen to Ceres, our other show, which is posted around the beginning of the month. Make Shift Stories is released under a Creative Commons non-commercial attribution, no derivative license, which means you're free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.